What I want to try and do is just kind of give an appreciation of what data lakes and big data is really about and what it has to offer for healthcare. So and I'd rather talk about really about data science, because that's what this comes down to, perhaps, rather than abstract concepts like data lakes. So what I want to talk about is how we have started to develop data lakes, the opportunities to use data to and data science in particular to transform healthcare. We're sitting on the edge of a huge opportunity here. This is fundamentally going to transform our healthcare system in the way it's transformed almost every other part of our modern life. And I want to give some examples about what big data, data lakes, data science can do for us. A little bit of background, those who don't know Ames. So Ames is a spin-out from the University of Liverpool. I used to be a prof of informatics at Liverpool. And a couple of points on this are quite relevant to really what. So one of the things that data lakes need is large-scale infrastructure. It really is a scale issue. I'll point out shortly. So we've built a large, basically, NHS facility in Liverpool, 1.5 megawatt, 200 rack facility. This needs to be done at scale. I often joke that if we lived in say North Korea, what we would do is we'd flatten a town in the north, say Darlington. We'd flatten a town in the south, say Milton Keynes. It's St Helens, by the way, when I give this talk in the northeast. And we would build two huge, great data center infrastructures, and we would run our healthcare data systems. But of course, we don't. We pay a big price in this country for our democracy. We have individual trusts which have accountability and transparency. But we have created the kind of spaghetti arrangement of data systems and technologies. And it is complex, as Declan pointed out earlier. It's not easy, this problem. This is not an easy problem. It's much more complex than your bank data. People often will say to me, you know, I can go anywhere in the world and I can access my bank data. This has semantic complexity, this data. This is not a simple thing. I think the sooner we realize that this is not a simple task, the technology isn't necessarily easy. It's doable, but it's not easy. And I think we have to kind of get to grips with that. We've also been very active in terms of connecting this infrastructure to the NHS. The NHS, most of you will know, runs its own private network and has done for many years. Has been the N3 network, now the HSCN network. So to enable access to health data, you need to be on that network. And that's very different to what our normal sort of internet expectations are. And we have built what we describe as health cloud. The first stages of this development, I want to just take you on this journey about how we've got to the position where big data is starting to impact healthcare, particularly here in the Northwest. So we've deployed a range of cloud technologies in the last 10 years, and mainly about hosting large-scale systems, or the data sets that have been created. We've started to create what you heard Tony Marston earlier talk about as trusted research environments. So these are areas where the data and the analysis can come together in a secure walled garden. It is about trust, this. This is a very delicate sort of social issue about, do I trust people to use my health data in an ethical and beneficial way? And it's a real challenge that. It is 50 times more valuable, it's estimated, than your financial data, incredibly more socially risky for people to share their health data. And one of the problems we have is that we've not really seen the benefits of large-scale use of the data. So we've never created the virtuous circle whereby people providing their data and the benefits they get from that access to their data has actually produced significant benefits. But that world is changing, not just because of the development in omics, but right across the board. We're living in a world where that data set, and that NHS data set, that 50-year, 50 million, is the largest, most valuable data set on the planet. I often draw the analogy with the Industrial Revolution. We're just at the start of a digital revolution. And what we have is a fantastic natural resource, and the way we did 200 years ago had coal and iron ore in this country. We've got a fantastic natural resource which will stimulate our economy, create the new digital age. But it is complex in healthcare. It is more complex. The data is more sensitive, and it is more seriously governed around governance and so on. So we've been building trust with the other thing that's been happening is that we've been moving towards this model of interoperability and the building of regional interoperability exchanges. And again, we've been at the heart of the plumbing of that. Ames is basically a plumbing company, if you like, small plumbing company in the Northwest. So building the infrastructure to enable those things. So our interpretation of what a data lake is actually a trustworthy research, an environment where this data can be. It's not about creating large-scale data warehouses. It's creating an environment where the data can be rested, and the data can be accessed and analysed by authorised individuals. And that's kind of where this needs to go. We identify three different components to this. One is around the interoperability. So how do we provide the access to data? A second around how you store the data and how you rest the data. And the third is around how you analyze. So that idea of having an interoperability provisioning, data provisioning and analytics provisioning is part of the structure that's emerged as to what these data lakes start to look like. And the controlled access to that environment is a key part of building this next generation of data lakes. So what we've started to recruit data scientists to be able to manage this. And one of the challenges there is that despite Harvard Business Review saying this is the sexiest job of the new millennium, it's actually a real challenge to undertake data science at scale. Data science is a combination of mathematical skills, software engineering skills, data wrangling skills, the Americans call it, and clinical skills. You've got to bring those skills together to be able to make sense of the data. And that's a real challenge. It's a challenge because they are different skill sets. They are different disciplines. They have different languages. And you've got to start to bring those skills together to be able to extract. I try to sort of paint this picture about what this big data revolution is. It came out, in simple terms, it came out of Google. Okay, Google produced this Hadoop ecosystem that led to the development of what we now think as of search. They did it because their problem was that the growth of the internet and the web meant that they had huge amounts of data so they had to have a new paradigm to look at it. Okay, and big data is based upon that new paradigm. That paradigm hasn't yet translated into healthcare. To any extent. So what we need, but the key components of what that Hadoop ecosystem gives, the three simplest components are: it enables you to do elastic search. You know, just think about the difference about searching. You know, where do I get, I'm late home tonight, where do I get find somewhere to eat? To find a local restaurant that's open past 11 o'clock that serves English or whatever it is. You know, you do that in Google now, and that's all done through simple search. You try and do that in a SQL database where you've got to build a dashboard to be able to, you know, that's kind of, the other part is around machine learning. Okay, being able to bring what again is being euphemistically called AI into our data, and particularly in healthcare, using natural language processing to be able to look at a lot of the richness of the data is actually in the written notes rather than in the clinical measurements. So, one of the areas, just kind of an example of this in the short time I've got, one of the areas that this starts to open up is the idea of temporal analysis of our health data. So if you imagine, if we had information exchanges, regional information exchanges, that are sharing the data, that is managing the flow of data in our healthcare system, just looking at the time-based, the temporal analysis of that data flow gives a whole series of new clinical insights. And I liken it to when they first put the SIM cards in the BMW 5 series in about 2005, I think it was. What it meant was, for the first time, a luxury car, but a mass-produced luxury car, was on our roads with SIM tracking. And what they were able to do from the data, the off-call data from the SIM card that they put into the BMW 5 Series, they were able to project what the traffic flows were like in the UK. A company based here in the Northwest took that data, looked at the routes, and was able to identify areas of congestion. Out of that flowed Traffic Master, and that whole ability to provide new insights from a new data set. And this is a similar kind of concept, the idea of being able to chronotype conditions, looking at the time-based event analysis of what's happening to patients, brings a whole set of new insights. Now, that data is just lost to us at the moment. We don't see that. There is so much of it. It is happening all the time, everywhere. Big data allows us to capture that data and make sense of that data. And in essence, the difference with Hadoop is that rather than structuring the data on the way in, which is what you do with traditional sort of SQL type data structures, you don't structure it on the way in, you structure it on the way out. So it enables you to collect data in a much more much greater scale and much greater velocity. So what we're doing is working, it's part of the Connected Health Cities program, which is really what kicked this off. This was the kickstart to this 2 years ago. We were looking at three specific pathways. Two were mentioned by Tony, epilepsy and alcohol-related liver disease. The other one is COPD. With a view that what we were looking to build is learning health systems. And this, in turn, led to this development of the data lake. The first phase of development, based here in the Northwest, so the Northwest DARC, was basically taking what is described as secondary use data, DESCRO data, into the ARC, and using it and separating the data ingestion from the data provisioning. I'll trip over this thing like everybody else. And then into an analytics zone, which can be accessed by external clinical research colleagues. This is about delivering what I describe as clinical intelligence. And I contrast that to business intelligence. NHS talks a lot about providing data to do business intelligence. This is clinical intelligence. This is understanding our pathways and our patient outcomes and providing new insight into that. So that was phase one. That was done about 18 months ago, which was basically bringing data into a simple data structure, allowing access. The second phase of the development of this lake, it was up with our colleagues over in the Northeast. So we built the ARC for the Connected Health Cities program over in the Northeast. And what the folk at Durham started to do was to take very specific data from a particular part of the healthcare system up in the Northeast. They put it into a SQL structure, and they started using tools like RStudio to be able to analyze that data. And they started to do predictive tools around early warning scores. So there's a set of algorithms being developed in this environment. And again, same concept, a walled environment which allows basically internet-facing clinical research and N3-facing, HSEN-facing health data to start to come together in a controlled and managed way. And then the next phase of this is where we're currently at, is to build this concept of a data lake where we have interoperability technologies, set of standards, IHE standards, for example, a data provisioning zone based upon Hadoop HDFS standards, and then a set of analytics tools which start to bring particularly the three I mentioned, machine learning, Elasticsearch, and natural language processing. So this is the start of that journey towards building a new infrastructure. And the infrastructure has to change. I hear two things at sessions like this. It's not about the technology. It's not just about the technology, but the technology does matter. The second thing I hear is that, you know, within the NHS, and Tony epitomized this, IT is seen as a punishment from God, isn't it? You know, that's the way it's seen. It's seen as some kind of imposition in every other part of our life, IT is the solution. Yesterday, I was stuck overseas yesterday, trying to get a flight back to Liverpool, which closed, the airport closed for a couple of hours yesterday. Working out what to do next, the first thing you do is you turn to the technology. So we've got to change that. We've got to change that. And part of that change, sure, there's huge transformational people engagement, but part of it is using the right technologies that support the kind of analysis we want to do. To bring this down to a couple of examples, so I've got some examples here of how we're currently working to look at this. And just a couple of examples. So, for example, in mental health, using predicting the onset of crisis for mental health patients suffering with depression. When you see a mental health patient descend into crisis, the indicators of that are usually fairly clear, and they're usually in our healthcare system somewhere. So if the patient also, say, suffers with diabetes, their management of their diabetes will start to decay. So being able to do a temporal analysis of the healthcare events associated with patients enables us to be able to provide new predictors to be able to... We're talking with our colleagues here in Lancashire, looking at atrial fibrillation thrombotic stroke prevention. You know, how do we know the link between AF and stroke. We don't know all the people who are suffering with AF. You know, there's a group of people who are suffering with AF who we just don't know, have not had the finger on the pulse, as they say. But you know, machine learning tools enable you to identify those kind of cohorts. There's a group of people who have AF, and we know have AF, who are not being treated because their AF has shown up as a secondary issue associated with some health event that they suffered. So being able to take that data. Now, to do that, you've got to be looking at all of the data in real time continuously, and that's where the new tool sets are needed. And in cancer care, the example in cancer care, we host the London Health and Care Information Exchange at AIMS, and one of the programmes there is looking at the diagnosis to treatment policy period, 62 days. The policy is to have no more than 62 days between diagnosis and treatment. Now, people who are going to fail that 62-day, you know about those people. You can predict that very early on in the cycle. The indicators that they're going to miss that timescale is very clear early on in their pathway. What we can't do is the vastness of the information and what's happening to the patients in London is just overwhelms us at the moment. So what we're looking at doing is being able to predict more accurately, and therefore, so what you don't want is 3 months after the event to be told that the compliance was less than 85%. What you need to know at the time, this patient is likely to miss this timeline because our predictor says they will not now meet you. So an intervention is needed at the point. So there's some of the examples how we can start to do it. And I was explaining to somebody at the break about this idea, there's an orthogonal problem of all of this. We've got to build the infrastructure at scale, but the outcomes are delivered in individual pathways. You know, medicine works in pathways. You have specialists in epilepsy, in cardiology, in oncology. So we need to deliver the outcomes in those verticals, but we need to develop the infrastructure across to support that. So the first stage of this, and this is a journey. It's not that the health service is too stupid or too underfunded to do this. This is a more complex set of situations. This is more complex data. These are more complex and challenging transformation. But I think what we are starting to see, this coming together of regional health information exchanges and trustworthy research environments to bring clinical intelligence to our health service. It is linked to the availability of health service data at scale. I think we are on a journey. It was described before in answer to the question about the opt-in, opt-out, that basically we distinguish between patient identifiable data used for direct care and secondary use data, which has to be anonymized or pseudonymized. I think we are moving, my own view is that we are moving to a world where patient data will be consented. I think nationally, societally, we will look towards consenting our data once we start to see the benefits. And somebody raised the issue of genomics, I think, in one of the talks. How are you going to pseudonymize genomics data? You know, so but linking that data to this, I think, is kind of fundamental to the journey that we are on. And the final point I'd make is, It requires data science, and that's not a discipline currently embedded in our healthcare system. So I think developing data science as a service will require new skills and a new approach to the way we manage data. Okay, thanks, Liz.